Welcome to The Ether. Today is Thursday, March 24th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the Lunatic community. Follow Orbital Command on Twitter using the link in the show notes to receive regular threads on Terra protocols and yield strategies, news, resources, and Twitter space discussions. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. Terra Spaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, part two of a two-part Thor Swap Q&A, Luna Rune Terra Thor Chain Integration. Let's take a listen.
Cool. Yeah, just trying to figure out where, in my mind, like where this would be useful and, you know, compared to other platforms where you can earn yield for like either BTC or whatever, like what's like, what potential use cases I or other people might have in this context. It's a lot of interesting features for sure, especially just because it's decentralized. And, you know, particularly when you have something like a widely adopted UST and, you know, you're coming in there with BTC, let's say you claim your yield as UST, and now you can spend your yield on whatever the hell you want using, you know, some sort of debit card or something. It's really a compelling use case for someone who's interested in saving with BTC and paying with UST, which is way more probable long run, in my view, than like you, people wanting to pay, you know, for their Domino's pizza with Bitcoin. But being able to pay using your yield, and like it's a really cleanly defined sort of like taxable event, in the sense that like if you're in a tax jurisdiction and you're legit and you want to pay your taxes, you know, you've got your UST coming as that you take ultimately as your yield, that just counts as essentially income at that point, right? Because there's no basis for it, and you could just simply like buy whatever the hell you want and you don't have to sell your Bitcoin. I think that would be just a super compelling use case for Bitcoin, and really like ultimately executes on the vision of what Bitcoin is supposed to be, which was essentially a store of value base layer with dramatically decreasing transactions over time, like Hal Finney said. Like, you know, you can buy ice cream with your UST and save your Bitcoin and you'd be fine.
Yeah, from a degen perspective, you could like save in Thor savings in Bitcoin, then use your yield, deposit that as in a LP, and then borrow USD against that LP to pay for your everyday expenses.
It looks like we got Chad B up here now, so maybe he can help shed some light on the question we had a few minutes ago around Thor savings and whether there will be a fixed interest rate. If there is, how long will it be fixed for? How will that be determined? Or will it be kind of a floating interest rate? I know I've kind of heard both ways in the past, so maybe Chad can jump in and give us some alpha on that point.
Yeah. So it's not fixed rate. And so think about it this way. Somebody takes out a loan and they put in $100,000 is like the dollar value of the collateral that they've deposited. And let's just say that this pool is a Luna pool, for example. And let's just say that this pool is making, you know, like a 20% yield on that $100,000 worth of LP units, right, of the Luna pool. So this pool is now, this saving is now earning $20,000 in value. And it goes equally to everybody who jumps into the savings position relative to the amount of capital that they've, you know, locked up into this saving position. So if there's only one person who's jumped in, no matter how much money they've put in, whether it's a penny or $1 billion, they're basically earning that $20,000, right? And so they might say, oh, well, I only have to put in, you know, a penny to earn this $20,000, so I'll just go ahead and do that. And then somebody else comes in, you know, Chad Theroux comes in a minute later and says, well, if I put in, you know, a lot more than a penny, then I'll pretty much get almost all of that $20,000, you know, dollars of value that this pool was generating. And so then it becomes this kind of this bidding war in a matter of speaking. And so with everybody who jumps in to add more value into this savings, it kind of changes the ratio of how much each individual person is earning, and it kind of drives down the APY, the more people that jump in with the more capital. And as Chad Theroux was kind of saying earlier, which was correct, was that the free market will eventually determine what that is going to be, what that APY is going to be. It's going to start very high with some, you know, probably ludicrous number to start with, and then it'll just get drive down to, until it gets to a place where the free market says, yeah, like, you know, the 10% is a good amount. I'm willing to stay in at 10%, but I'm not willing to stay in at 8%. And so then it gets down to 8%, people leave, which pushes it back up to 9 or 10 or whatever it might be. And so it's not fixed rate, it's variable rate. And the more people that provide collateral into, you know, the Luna pool to get a loan, get a Thor USD loan, the more yield, the more interest that savers make, right? And so every time somebody opens up a loan, more LP units are now being earning more value to everybody in that savings, the Luna savings position. And so that's just kind of this natural economic kind of battle is going to take place, where the free market is just going to determine who gets what, how much, and people are going to just, you know, naturally follow whatever they want to do for themselves. But you always are exposed. In that case, like in the Luna case, like you can deposit Luna, layer one Luna, into the system, which the network will just kind of track that accounting with like Thor Luna, right? And that's locked up into that savings vault. And then when you make a request from your Luna address, like, oh, I'm done here, I'm going to withdraw my position or whatever, which you can do. Then it just sends you Luna. So if you put in 100 Luna, and then it's going to send you back like 120 Luna, maybe, or whatever however much you've earned in that time span. So it's all abstracted away from you. You don't have to worry about what actually is happening in the back end. Of course, you're welcome to dive into it, understand if you want to. But from a user perspective, from a UX perspective, I'm adding Luna, and then I'm coming back, you know, 6 months later, and I'm getting more Luna.
Yeah. A little side note question while you're here, Chad. Yeah, nice hearing from you again. Currently on ThorSwap and ThorChain, what are the most popular pairs in terms of volume now? Is it like a USDT Bitcoin pairing, or what are you guys seeing?
The most popular in terms of the highest trade volume is right now it's BUSD. Get my laptop, but I can actually give you the real,
like, why, real numbers. Like, why do you think that is? It's just like that community embraced like trading between BUSD and Bitcoin, or do Bitcoiners tend to use it? Or
I don't think it has anything to do with the Binance community, to be honest with you. I think it's that case because a majority of trades on the network, or on any AM for that matter, are arbitration, right? Arbitrage, excuse me. So I think the ARBs who are using this network, they will probably most likely start from a stable coin and then do a one or two trades, whatever, to find an arbitrage opportunity and trade back to like their stable coin, so that they start with X number of stable coin and they end with Y, and Y is always larger than X. And so this ensures that they kind of like, they lock in their profits immediately, rather than exposing themselves to 9 different tokens and and price fluctuations that eats their, you know, their profits they're making on these margin kind of trades.
But like, what makes BUSD attractive in this regard? And like, what might make UST, for example, as attractive or more so or otherwise? Like, what's your thoughts on where this is all going?
The reason why BUSD is so popular is because it is the cheapest and the fastest stable coin on the network, right, by far. And so it's not USDC or UST where it's on Ethereum where there's like really obviously very expensive gas costs and transactions are like 15 seconds and all this kind of stuff. But I think when UST comes out, this is my assumption, and who knows if I'm going to be right or wrong, but my assumption is that I think a lot of our bots are going to want to use UST because it's just as fast. And just more or less, it's just as cheap as BUSD, but you're not beholden to the Binance corporation to maintain that that stablecoin is like, worth what it is. So I think it's all going to come down to these RBOTs. Do they think what's a safer stablecoin? Is it UST that's going to maintain this peg, or is it BUSD? And so I think different people will have different opinions on which one's the better token. And they can argue that one's better than the other for whatever reasons they want to argue. But
I've still been trying to wrap my head around like what CZ and like the Binance team are thinking from the perspective of like the future of BUSD. Cause you know, they feel compelled also, well, Binance tends to try to stay fairly neutral and try to support everything generally, but I think they feel somewhat compelled to support sort of the Luna UST situation. And I'm just curious, like long-term, if what their like continuing like evolution of BUSD is going to be, if for all intents and purposes, UST is more decentralized, like you said, you don't have to worry about, you know, like that corporate counterparty risk. Like how's the BTC community who's entering Thorchain going to see that, you know, because there's obviously the settlement layer and then the cost of transactions. And then there's also just like, you know, the philosophical reasons, I suppose, like you said, that people might choose one or the other and all that. So, yeah, it'd be interesting. I guess there's going to be some arbitrage opportunities between the various stable coins as they emerge as well, I guess, which should help like peg all of the stable coins in theory. Right.
Right. Right. I mean, my two cents is that like if I was an arbitrage bot, there are two things that I'd be concerned about when trying to figure out which UST should I use, UST or BUSD or whatever. And the problem with UST relative to a centralized stablecoin is that it's more likely to break the peg, not permanently, right? It can happen just naturally, and it kind of already happens. Like LFG kind of steps in sometimes to correct some pricing in some like in Curve, for example, because of just limitations on the minting of UST. So it's like, to me, like UST is more likely to break the peg, but not in a sustained way. Like it'll fix itself eventually. And to me, I don't personally, if I'm holding like a stable coin, I actually don't care if it breaks the peg, to be honest with you. What I care about is that will it return to it. But the problem with I have with centralized coins like BUSD and USDC and all these things is that there's a non-zero chance and maybe even a likely chance that one day all of these stable coins at the same time overnight will lock everybody's assets. Just lock it up. And then you can't access your USDT or USDC or your BUSD until you KYC your address with, you know, the United States government or whatever. And then that would be, they would maintain the peg. The peg would be correct. It's still worth a dollar. But then all of a sudden, they have this like gigantic kind of like KYC rug pull in a sense. And all of them are just kind of exposed to this thing. And everybody's just like left there like, oh, I have all this USDC and I can't send it or do anything with it. It's useless until I actually KYC with the government, which is going to be like a huge event. I think that's going to happen. There's a good chance that may happen at some point in the future once the government gets deeper, the U.S. government gets deeper into crypto, which definitely will at some point. And at that point, I'd much rather be dealing with the UST problems of a more likely depeg from the dollar than like BUSD would have, to be honest. But
yeah, there'd I'm be okay a weird like in that context too. There'd be like a weird flight to UST, and UST wouldn't be able to support immediately that kind of demand too, right? So it would tend to quickly depeg to the upside.
Almost every stable coin will probably depeg. If hypothetically, if all the centralized stable coins just overnight at the same time just said, you have to KYC, all funds are locked until you do, that would be a crazy event. And there, you're right, there would be this huge flight towards, you know, decentralized ones, whether it be UST or ThorUSD or maybe MIM or what. I don't know, idea. But they'll probably all depeg as part of that, because UST won't be able to maintain its peg, and just because the demand is so much higher, right? And it'll eventually fix it. It'll, you know, and that's, it'll be fine. Like, I'm not worried about it any stretch of imagination, but it's going to be a huge.
I would figure out where to send it to remit it for USD if it did that to the upside. So I would ARB that immediately, personally. But anyway, that's a different issue.
ARBing it obviously makes a lot of sense, because it'll probably, USD would probably trade above a dollar at that point. If that were ever to happen, hypothetically, it would trade at like $1.50, or, you know, depending upon how much, you know, FUD and like, you know, flight there is in the larger crypto community. But yeah, you could ARB that and just dump it, you know, into Luna and ARB it.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the interesting thing about UST Luna, is you don't actually have to go to a centralized exchange to ARB it at that point, which is pretty fascinating as well.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I like the Luna UST kind of design.
Cool. Yeah, we've had quite the afternoon discussion here, like Thoreau here and I, and like we're just trying to like figure out how to, you like how the, I was just kind of asking questions specific to how, like, you know, Terra community would use the LPs there. And, you know, he was just talking about ThorFi and the possibility of, like, you know, borrowing off of your LPs and how that mechanic works. And it's all very interesting. I think there's a lot of interesting fun to be had, at least for me.
Yeah. I mean, in the ThorFi concept, like the idea that you can lock up some, you know, some Luna rune into a pool, for example, and then take out a loan in ThorUSD and then swap it into Luna to like give yourself more Luna exposure is pretty, I mean, that's pretty interesting stuff to me.
Yeah, that's what I was saying I was most interested in would be, me personally, like the ability to just connect up a Terra Station wallet to be able to provide either UST or Luna unidirectionally while entering a pool. And being able to do so without a whole lot of like fancy legwork. And then one of the guys had mentioned, hey, you know, you could use an XDeFi wallet and things like that. And you can just like provide a little bit into your secondary coin in the LP, so that if you wanted to exit as Rune, or if you wanted to exit as UST or whatever, you have more options. And I thought that was a pretty fascinating like suggestion or tip. So yeah, we learned a lot today in terms of theory before you got here in terms of user you know, possibilities for users and such.
Yeah, totally. Got quite a few other people up here too, if people want to try to just jump in. I don't know who has spoken or not, so just have at it.
Yo, what up Chad,
how's it going?
Chad, is Pluto and Cal here, familiar Cal?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's up Chad?
Both Chads.
Both Chads. Yeah, so we just pushed out the update to 1.8.3 on ChaosNet. So the node operators are underway with adopting that. But I was just jumping in to tell Chad B that Heimdall says that we can just unhalt the Terra chain now. So why don't we go ahead and do that right now?
It's happening live.
There's other stuff too. So I'll just explain real quick what we need to do before we can actually start trading on Luna. That's just like step like eight of something. Where'd it go? I had it up here 2 seconds ago. Sorry guys. Yeah. So we just got done releasing the ChaosNet multi-chain 1.8830 to nodes. We can go ahead and halt Terra chain zero now, and then basically start the churn as soon as we have fully adopted 1.83. As soon as we adopt 1.83 and then we churn, we'll have an Asgard vault, and then we just need to send a test transaction to that Asgard vault, wait for a sufficient number of validators to observe that transaction, and then we'll be ready to basically start Terra trading and LP. So depending on how quickly like node operators get on right now and update to 1.8.3, we could be trading Luna rune pools, I don't know, like in the next 6 to 8 hours potentially. So the final countdown is on, and the churn should start like right after we set the interval back to what it was before, because it's been the last time we churned was before the hard fork, and some people have been asking us why we waited so long to re-enable the churn. Well, it was mainly to be able to time it with releasing Terra, you know, but also we didn't want to have to deal with the release being in the middle of a churn. So yeah, this will be the first churn since we fork as well. And then, yeah, we'll have Terra vaults that we can start depositing into. So really excited to have this getting started now. I mean, this is the final countdown has started.
Hell yeah. Thanks for the live update. That's
some like theme music exciting. Or something.
I'm just going to hear like a trailer, like in a world where Terra is like,
yeah, we need some dramatic background music.
We almost live in that world. Hopefully tomorrow we'll see this thing going. And what's crazy is that there's almost 400 people in here right now. And I'm sure a lot of people are looking forward to seeing the biggest and best way to earn yield on your UST, on your Terra, on your Luna, your Terra and your Luna, and start swapping Bitcoin, Terra, Luna, everything all together on one multi-chain DEX. So hold your stuff on your wallet. Don't have to give custody to anybody. This is the forefront of multi-chain technology right here.
Hey, Chad, while you're here, and while we're sort of like doing this little celebration or whatever, let me ask you something. So the privacy coins that are connected to Thorchain. So at this point, like if someone needed to obfuscate their like UST or their Luna, you're going to do this how? You would go on there and you would do a swap from like, let's say, Rune to a Monero or something, and then you would convert from like Monero back to UST and hook it up to a separate wallet. Like what is the process for that? And you know, because like I guess Secret Network, some sort of integration maybe in the works is my understanding. I don't know the first thing about what's going on, but maybe clarify what like security options there would be in terms of like just cloaking where your money is coming and going.
Yeah, so most likely the first privacy coin to be added is probably going to be Zcash, just because it's furthest along in terms of getting the chain client and the Thorchain JS exchange JS library, all this kind of stuff. I think it's the most furthest along of all of them, so it'd probably be Zcash. Excuse me. But if you wanted to kind of like get some privacy with your like your UST or your Luna, yeah, you can effectively do what you're saying. You can swap your Luna to, you know, Zcash, for example, you know, some wallet address, and then swap it back to Luna again to a different address that is, you know, clean, has no history behind it. If you wanted to do that, you could. A few things that you want to be just kind of be constant of is that you want to make sure that you don't swap immediately back, right? Like if I were to swap,
yeah, there's like a time. A $1 million goes in here, it goes out there, it's sort of obvious or whatever.
It's super obvious. So you have to be a little bit clever about, you know, waiting time and doing several transactions back of random amounts, right?
Because the most immediate use case right now is that like we don't have a good platform on Terra yet, like for doing something similar. And obviously, like, it's just a pain in the ass right now to fund a new wallet that we want to have public facing. Like, you know, let's say people want to buy NFTs or they want, you know, whatever. Like, what we're faced with doing now is creating essentially a new wallet, going to a centralized exchange, ordering up whatever we want and sending it to a new wallet. Whereas, I was envisioning Thorchain as a possible solution for this kind of issue without going to a CEX.
Yeah, I think I missed about half of that. I think this audio is cutting in out a little bit.
Oh, crap. No, I was just saying, like, for now, there isn't a solution on Terra. And I was hoping, like, Thorchain would be a good possibility for this.
Yeah, I think it is a possibility for this. But you also want to be aware of, like, the depths of the pool. So if it is, like, Zcash, for example, like, how deep is that pool? Does it have $1 million in it? Does it have $100 million in it? And that will help dictate, like, how much you pay in fees to kind of transact from, you know, from one wallet to another wallet. You know, so to be aware of that as well when you're kind of making your calculations.
And just to be clear for everybody listening, there are no privacy coins currently active on Thorchain today. There's a lot of code that's been done and a lot of stuff in the works, but there's nothing that's been enabled yet at this point.
Yeah, correct.
And I just want to say to Pluto real quick, it's pretty impressive. I think you did a good thing by keeping all the nodes in the set, in the active set that were here for the hard fork, because they're updating really quickly. We've already got 70 out of 101. So things are moving fast as far as the update goes.
Yeah. Also, just to add on that, just generally shout out to Pluto. Definitely follow at Pluto9R. He basically the guy spearheading this whole Terra integration. So you've got Pluto to thank for this all coming together here. So yeah, thanks Pluto. Let's let a few of these other people ask questions that have been waiting a while. Bowtie, and then let's go to Casey.
Yeah, thanks. I had a pretty straightforward question about the APYs listed on ThorSwap or anywhere else that you see an APY for these liquidity pools. And so really, I just want to get a better understanding of how to think about those APYs and what do they really mean? I mean, does it depend on how you enter the liquidity pool, either symmetrically or asymmetrically? Is there any way to see historical rates? Do the fees within the pool drive the APY, or is it really the change in the price of the assets or Rune driving those APYs? Like, how are they calculated, sort of?
So every pool is 50-50 Rune, right? So it doesn't actually matter how you enter, though your own, like, personal sort of accounting or how you think of that might matter. You know, some people, like, compare single-sided to dual, which to me doesn't really make quite sense. That's more of just like making a trade to enter. So the APY is in terms of the 50-50 share. So assume that both assets just were to go flat for a while. That's like what the APY is kind of representing, right? It's in terms of the 50-50 share you're earning in terms of both. But in reality, yeah, then there's also sort of like the rebalancing, the impermanent loss that occurs due to the two assets moving independently of each other. Though with the permanent loss protection, you're protected up into basically being the same as if you had just held. The IL can wipe out the yield, but you would at least be back to that point. So yeah, in reality, I guess it's like, I'm curious if Mogarki or Chad, if you have other ways of thinking of this, but I believe the fair way to say it would be like, that's the APY based on, well, to one of your questions, it's from the actual usage from the swaps. It's not just like some farm token or some incentivized thing. It's based on just the actual usage. But yeah, that's based on recent history and would fluctuate, like your actual value would fluctuate based on the rebalancing of your position. But it would be that if it was, if the assets were flat.
Oh yeah, and one other thing I just wanted to add to that. I just posted a thread to the chat if you guys want to check it out. I made it a couple of days ago, basically explaining the how the liquidity pools work, how the APY in this case would work, and how it fluctuates So like, yes, you can understand that as more people to deposit, it would seem to dilute the yields, but you have to remember the yields are denominated in rune. So as more people deposit, that also juices the price of rune. And when the price of rune is juiced and you have more people swapping and trading, that also juices the APYs and APRs on the pools itself. So that it kind of, just take a look into that thread. It's a bit long, but it'll kind of give you an understanding of what you're going to look at.
One thing people should note, that for the APY that you see on ThorSwap, I think it's a calculation over the last week of activity. And so when UST and Luna pools are created, at first those APYs are going to look very small. And it's only because it's looking at the last week of data, which there's only been like 6 hours of data or whatever the hell it is that you're looking at. And so it looks very small just because of just how that math kind of works out. But as the week kind of goes by, it'll just start going up, up, up relative to what it's actually going to be. So after 1 week of the pool actually being active, you'll see the actual yield is for that pool according to the ThorSwap UI, just so people know.
Great tip. Yeah, thanks for adding that. Casey, do you want to go ahead?
Cool. Yeah, no, super awesome. This is great, guys. When I hopped on, there was a discussion of like a BTC saving product. Would generate yield for, BTC holders that either, I guess they were posting collateral or they were doing something with their BTC. And I was kind of wondering what generated the yield, you know, on a proof of work token.
Yeah. So how that works is somebody who takes out a loan kind of, and the loan, the collateral they provide is LP units, which is a yield bearing asset. And so that person who's taking out the loan, they're just saying, here's the collateral, it's a yield-bearing asset. I want to keep the collateral, but I don't want to keep the yield, right? And so maybe you put in $100 and you come back later, it's now worth $130. That $30 goes to what we call Thor savings, and you keep the $100, so to speak, right? And so somebody walks up who's a BTC, you know, maxi or something like this, and they want to earn BTC on their BTC, and so they deposit BTC into the network. They get that part of that $30 that collateral generated, or all of the collateral combined generated, and then they walk away with with whatever that is.
I'm removing you from speakers. Don't know if that was intentional, but let's move on.
That was super helpful. On the BTC collateral, so it's like you can single-sided provide BTC and you guys on the back end are pairing that with something else to create an LP unit, which is generating fees from basically transaction fees that then get funneled to both sides of the LP. Is that kind of what's happening?
Not quite. I mean, it's somewhat close to that, but somewhat far away at the same time. It's there's no pairing on the back end. It's just the you're depositing some Bitcoin. The network kind of saves some accounting of how much you've deposited, and then it just calculates how much you've deposited versus everybody else. So say you have 10% of the savings, the BTC savings, just for sakes, and then all that collateral yield that somebody else put into the network that they put in to create loans for themselves, that generates some amount of money, and you just own 10% of whatever it is produced. So it's not really kind of like pairing you with somebody else and like giving you LP units. It's not quite like that. It's more of like some other system is generating yield and just giving it to you in this Thor savings, you know, protocol, and you're just like taking whatever is given to you.
Also, I just want to clarify real quick, but if people are kind of just jumping into this, we're talking about like a few different timelines at once here. So like, for example, like just the classic Thor chain stuff, the Terra integration, that's the stuff that's like now. When we're talking about like this lending stuff, the savings product, that's part of the ThorFi features that are not live right now. And like the design is not even for sure finalized. The docs just came out. people are kind of like poking holes in it, stuff like that. And, you know, this is probably several months out for those features. The conversation kind of always drifts that way just because it's so exciting, and myself included, I'm thinking about it all the time, but just want to clarify, like, the lending and savings products, like, this stuff is further out. And not something you can do today, but today, you know, you can do all the decentralized swapping, you can do the liquidity pooling, earn yield like that, but there's no single-sided yields today. There's no lending today either, but just want to clarify.
Yeah. So just to like linger on this thought, because I thought I got it, but then I feel like I don't got it, which is, at first you said that the collateral is basically an LP, which is yield bearing. So I presume that kind of means that, like, if you have an LP unit, you know, it's got two tokens and there's transaction fees from people trading between the tokens, and that transaction stream or transaction fee stream can create non-inflationary income that you can give to liquidity providers. Is that the yield generating function for the BTC single-sided stuff? That's why I said paired with something on the back end, but it sounds like I was off.
It is, but it's somebody else's. So it's like, so Alice walks up, she deposits some capital into the BDC pool, acquires, you know, 1,000 LP units or something like this, and then Alice decides that she wants to, you know, take out a loan on that collateral and get some Thor USD, then swap it into more BDC because she's a BDC, you know, person. And then, you know, Bob walks up and says Bob wants to not participate in the lending protocol, but participate in the savings protocol. And so Bob says, okay, here's my BDC. I'm giving you one BDC and giving the yield, you know, which includes the yield that Alice's 1,000 LP units is generating. And so these two different people are like two different people doing two different things that relate to each other to some degree, but largely don't, you know, as confusing as that might sound. So it's really like not a person, a savings person does not actually own any LP units, nor are they exposed to them, at least not their principal. The principal is always just locked into what it is. You can't have IL on your principal, for example. But you're just getting whatever yield is produced by the collateral that other people have deposited on the lending side, not on the savings side.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Hey, Chad, quick question. I know you mentioned about the impermanent loss protection also being enabled on the Thor savings. How would that work exactly? Like, say, for example, after 100 days, because I know if you withdraw early, you actually get penalized. It's 1% per day. But after leaving it in there 100 days, what is like, what's your protection on that? Like, let's say Rune goes, it gets cut in half. What is like, can you explain like the flow on that?
Yeah. So ILP does not apply to any of the ThorFi stuff, right? And there's a reason why that is. And so on the savings side, you're only exposed to a single asset, so you don't have any IL to be concerned about, really, right? So there's no ILP there because you don't experience any IL. You deposit, you know, one Bitcoin to acquire one Thor BDC, you know, position in the savings protocol, and you don't lose that one BDC. Like, that's yours. It's not going to get changed because of some price movements of Rune or BDC. It doesn't matter what happens in that regard. As a lender, you are not getting ILP because when you enter into your LP state, like when you first acquire the LP units, you have some sort of ratio between asset and Rune, whatever ratio that might be, right? And so when the price moves of Rune versus, you know, Bitcoin or Bitcoin versus Rune or whatever, the ratio kind of changes. Right. But when you take out a loan, you are taking a new ratio, like you're taking a new snapshot, like the network is actually taking a snapshot in that moment of like, okay, you're giving me 1,000 LP, you know, units. How much is that worth in Rune and asset right now in the network? Which maybe that's like one BDC and, you know, 10,000 Rune or whatever the hell the number would be. And so because that there's a change in the ratio between when you enter the LP units and when you're actually clearing out the opening up that loan, there's no need for ILP because you're kind of like starting from a position of zero, more or less. Like you're not, you know. And so when you come back later, you don't get ILP when you come back later because the yield that is goes against the IL that you might experience, you're not acquiring that. That's being given to the savings people, right? So the network can't give you ILP because you are not the one that the thing that fights the IL is that yield that you're generating. But because that's no longer generating yield, you no longer get impermanent loss protection while you have your loan open, right? And so you might come back later and say, okay, I'm going to close my loan and whatever. And the network will then take that second and figure out, okay, you gave me a one BTC and 10,000 rune at the beginning of this loan when we opened it. Now let's calculate how much that's worth LP units today. So if I were to deposit one BTC and 10,000 rune right now into the pool, how much LP units would I get? It would be some number, maybe being 900 units or some, I don't know what the number would be, but just making up a number. That's what you would get. And then ILP kicks in at that point and starts, your 100 days starts then to kind of the clock gets restart. And then you get an ILP after that point. So, but not during the loan. And that's because the loan is not, you no longer are acquiring yield and therefore the network is not going to pay out ILP on a position that's not even generating any yield. Cause it's just like, it's like 100% loss for the network, right? It doesn't make any mathematical sense to do that, at least not to me, at least.
Okay. So I think I understand the flow now. So you deposit into that.
Let me put it this way. So the reason why the network can do ILP is because the slip-based fee mechanism is so profitable, right, that it generates a lot of yield, right? And so you don't experience IL typically after 100 days because you've just generated so much yield that the yield that you've generated is greater than the IL that your position has experienced. At least that's true in like 99.something% of the time, right? And so if you're not getting any yield, then obviously if the price has moved at all, ratio between those two assets, there is some amount of IL that is experienced. And the network's not going to pay you and like back that because you're not getting any yield to go against the IL, right? That's the, how I think about it, at least.
So basically, what's paying out is the yield. It's not ruined from the treasury. So like basically, what you're saying is like it's the swap fees that are accumulated because it's dynamic swap fees. So like if you swap $1 million and the pool depth is only like 10 million. They're going to be way higher on you compared to if you're swapping like $10,000.
Right.
Okay. So basically, it's not that you guys offer impermanent loss protection. It's just saying like, hey, you need to stay in your 100 days because we've calculated that around 100 days that the swap fees are so profitable that mathematically, after about 100 days, it's going to be more or even.
Right. So the network requires a 100-day minimum, right, on loans and you can leave earlier with a fee. But the reason why it does that is because the network is kind of calculated as we kind of look at the math historically that after 100 days, some yield is generated. It's almost always in a positive state. So we want to make sure that everybody who's coming in and taking out a loan is generating yield for all the savers on the other side of the aisle, in a matter of speaking. They're all here to generate yield. And if everybody's just entering and leaving and entering and leaving and entering and leaving and not actually like spending enough capital there to actually generate real yield for the savers, then it's kind of not really helping out the savers very much, right? Because they're not actually going to generate any actual yield in the end because of IL problems. So it forced everybody just to stay in the network for 100 days. Just to ensure that some amount of yield is generated to make it profitable for the savers to make money.
Just to clarify real quick on the point that you were asking about, do you not offer impermanent loss protection? Is 100 days some kind of estimate as to when the fees will most likely cover it? That's not quite right. The protocol actually does offer impermanent loss protection, and that is paid out of the protocol reserve. So anytime that someone makes a swap on ThorChain, they're going to pay 3x the gas of a normal transaction. So one of those gas is going to go onto the chain itself. Another one is going to go to the liquidity providers as their yield And the third is going to go into the protocol reserve. And one of the things that the protocol reserve is used for is paying out impermanent loss protection. So in addition to that, the protocol reserve is also issuing block rewards and producing yield in that way. But you can check actually at any time how much ILP exposure the network has. I'm looking at it right now. The network has about 107,000 rune worth of ILP exposure. So if everyone were to withdraw right now and claim their ILP, those funds would have to come out of the protocol reserve. But there is an actual reserve of funds that's used to pay out impermanent loss protection. I think there's somewhere else where we can see how much has been paid out over time. I don't have that in front of me right now, but maybe Chad B has that number.
Okay, so then rune is like worst scenario, some rune is sold into, like, say for example, you're doing a stable coin, it's sold into a stable coin, or you're compensated in additional rune when you withdraw.
Yeah,
like we're just saying theoretically, just like for if you were liquidity providing, not even depositing on DorFi.
Yeah, ILP is generally paid in rune unless you have an asymmetric position, and then it's going to be paid out in the native asset.
Got it. Okay. Now I understand that a bit better.
It's just so people know, like right now, if everybody were to like withdraw all the LP positions, just like the entire network were to mass exit it, like right now, the amount of rune that would be spent from the reserve into those people is 107,000 rune, which is, you know, out of a protocol that has billions of dollars, I think all over a billion or something like this, it's, you know, a small drop in the bucket. I mean, it's not the pools themselves are worth 300 and something million dollars, and that rune right there is not even worth, you know, $1 million. It's like it's not even a full percentage point, right? And most of that, by the way, and most of that's just because the X room pool. The X room pool has the most at like 71,000, just because the X room pool had massive IL, just because it started the whole pool at like, you know, some pennies, and then it jumped up to like you know, close to a dollar, what the hell it was, which caused massive IL, which is why we don't like doing you know, IDOs anymore on ThorChain. It kind of abuses the purpose of IL protection.
Cool. Irritation or SN5, anyone who hasn't asked a question, feel free.
Hey guys, how are you doing?
How's it going?
Good. So no, not a question, but just to add, help you guys with, well, people were talking about the privacy before. So the beauty of, I mean, we all want, obviously, I mean, Monero and all these privacy coins will probably be very good catalysts for volume. But in the meantime, that's the beauty of TorChain too. I mean, once we have Luna, you know, I mean, right there you get access to IBC and can go on secret network Shade. I mean, you get access to that. Same way that we get, once you have access with EVM, you get access to pretty much everything that is EVM compatible. So that's one way to get access to privacy in the meantime without any centralized exchange. And Cake Wallet too is a really nice option. So if anybody is using is looking to use privacy without relying on centralized exchanges, you can still Cake Wallet. It has an integrated swap feature for Monero, I think, and Heaven is coming to there. So that'll be a nice mix with TorChain. I mean, in the meantime, it's other ways you can access privacy.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks for adding that. I was hearing a bit of robot voice on my end, but I think it came through. Yeah. Thanks for that. Irritational ape.
Sorry, let me just say one more thing before we get on to that. So somebody asked how much rune has been paid out thus far in permanent loss protection. That number right now, you can find it on thorchain.net, but it's $215,000 since the start of the network back in April, which is right now it's worth like, I think it's like $1.5 million or something like that. That's the total it's been paid out thus far.
Yeah, that's nothing.
Yeah, I just had a quick question. I think it may have already been answered, but just wanted to clarify. So say I have 10 Luna, and for math's sake, we'll just say it's worth $100 a piece, and I deposit it as collateral for lending, and I pull out 100% of that that collateral, pull out a $1,000 loan. So say when I come back and pay off the loan, say Luna's gone up in value, do I pay back that $1,000 loan and I get the 10 Luna back, or do I get the whatever that LP that I initially deposited back? Like, do I get that the LP value, whatever it has gone up?
Yeah, it's not the 10 Luna, it's the LP value.
Okay, all right. That's what I thought. Thanks.
There is talks internally about the idea of being able to use like Thor Luna or Thor BTC or any of these derived assets as collateral instead of an LP unit. And that's totally possible. I mean, there's no technical reason why we couldn't do that. There's concerns about whether that would make the network a little bit top heavy in terms of the derived assets, as well as doing that doesn't directly add value to the pools. It indirectly does by burning rune and increasing rune's value, which causes the pools to get deeper, but not in a direct fashion, which means I don't think it helps as helpful to the network. We want all these sort of features are all dedicated around the idea of just like driving value into the pools, making the pools deeper, making the rune asset more valuable by extension. And so like doing something like that is technically possible, but I'm not sure, or we're not sure if that's going to happen or not. Maybe part of V2 of Thorify possibly.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Yeah. I was just wondering because I'm trying to think of some degen strategies. So.
Degen it up.
Hey guys, you guys hear me?
Hey, yeah.
Hi. Loving the convo so far. Just wanted to jump in and ask a question relating to the work you guys are doing with Thorify, since I've spent a lot of time trying to understand it actually. We're actually building the first interface for the Thorify products over a Lendscape. Anyways, my question is, one of the most common strategies on lending protocols is folding, which is essentially depositing collateral, then using the collateral ratio to borrow the same or different asset, sort of like leverage your position. How would this work with 0% debt rates? Can someone hypothetically deposit and borrow infinitely until you know, the APYs are like basically zero? Is there a fix for this, or am I thinking about this wrong?
Well, you're thinking about it slightly wrong. The network does not offer 100% CR for every loan. In fact, the CR number increases with every loan that is taken out. So if there was, you know, say it was at 200% and you put in $200, you get at $100. And then you take that $100, you get more LP units, and then you deposit for another loan, that you'll probably, instead of getting, you know, $50 on that second loan, you might get, you know, 40 something or something like this. And so every loan that's taken out increases the CR effectively until somebody pays back their loan, and then the next loan is slightly less than the previous one. So there's going to be a constant kind of battle between people who are opening loans and closing loans to either increase the collateralization ratio or the LTV or decreasing it, depending on the activity that's happening, and depending upon what the max CR is configured on the network. So you can't just borrow infinitely, because that would be a little bit crazy. Even if you could, even if you did decide to do like 100% for everybody, which is not what it is, but even if that was the case, you couldn't do it infinitely either, that case either, because you need to acquire LP units, and the pools can only handle so much liquidity before they get kind of like, you know, maxed out. Right, you can't add more liquidity, and you can't acquire more LP units. So, in either case, it would never be a situation where you can borrow infinitely. That would be an economically insolvent design if it was.
Okay, yeah, sounds good. I also just wanted to see if actually how would it work if you were to deposit and then the collateral ratio was to go down? Would, since there's no liquidations, how would you handle the position of handle the user's funds position?
Well, I think that's just the beauty of it, is that you don't have to do anything. You don't have to handle it. You don't have to get somebody to liquidate them or any of these things. The network doesn't care when that happens. And the reason why the network doesn't care is because the lender who lent out that money to create the loan, to create the debt of the loan, they get paid back almost immediately via the Thor savings person depositing and burning rune. And so in all cases, whenever a loan is taken out, the economic pressures of the design always ensures that more rune is burned than minted to get out the debt in the loan. And so if the collateral goes below the debt, the lender, who would normally be the one at risk in a normal DeFi loan scenario, doesn't actually care because they've already been paid back the money that they gave out, right? So they don't care if the loan goes below the collateral goes below the debt. They don't care if that person pays it back at all, ever. It doesn't even matter to the lender at all anymore because they're already profitable. They already made their money, so it doesn't matter anymore. So there's nothing to do. There's nothing that needs to be done because it has no effect or matter on anybody in the network, right? Whether you're an LP, whether you're a saver, whether you're a node, like all those people still have access to 100% of their value that they're owed in the network. Nobody is, oh, I can't get the money that I deposited. Like that's never the case, no matter what happens, even when the collateral goes below the debt. So because of that, nobody freaks out, nobody panics because everybody's access to everything that they're owed. And it's like, there's nothing, it's a non-issue. It's a non-event when the collateral goes below the debt.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, very smart with the burning. That's one of the things I missed. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for answering my question.
And the way to think about it is that every time the loan goes out, the debt amount, whatever that is, gets minted in rune value, and the collateral amount gets burned in whatever amount that is. And so you put in $200 in collateral and get $100 in debt. $100 is minted, $200 is burned for a net negative of $100 of rune has been reduced, the supply of rune in the Thorchain ecosystem. That happens on every single loan.
Okay. Thank you. That answered my question. Appreciate it.
Cool. Anyone else can just jump in. Also, if people have already asked a question, if you don't mind just stepping down because we have more requests than speakers at the moment. But yeah, anyone, whoever's still up with a question, go for it.
Hey guys, I kind of have the question on, like, because we've been talking about different LP strategies and earn side and so on. Would it be possible to have some type of DApp similar to kind of what Yearn Finance does with stablecoins, but use it with Rune to kind of like put Rune in the most like profitable APR LP strategy? Like, how hard would that be to be able to like jump that Rune around?
Well, pretty hard, because the reason why that works in Ethereum like Yearn things, because there's lots of DeFi protocols on the Ethereum, in the Ethereum ecosystem. So there's lots of different things you can jump into, whether it be, you know, protocol A, B, C, or D, or E. But because Rune is a native asset to its own chain, there's not really like 1,000 different protocols that you can kind of pick and choose from. Hypothetically, you could, you know, beam it via IBC over to another chain, into like Terra or, you know, one of the other chains in the IBC ecosystem. But that's basically the reason why you really couldn't do that, unless you, which this may happen one day, that we create a new Rune asset. That is actually not a new Rune asset. It's actually still Rune. Like, you can create an ERC-20 Rune, not the one that already exists today, but a different one. And it mints and burns as you mint and burn native Rune, right? So if you have native Rune and you want to move to Ethereum and then jump into Yearn, like you're talking about, theoretically it's possible that the network, because it's multi-chain, like in its core, in its bones, in its core DNA, it can burn a native Rune, mint an ERC-20 Rune on the other side, and therefore keep the peg exactly perfect, because technically you don't need a peg anymore because it actually is the asset. It's, like it's actually the idea that a single asset exists on multiple chains simultaneously, and it's not a wrapped asset. It's actually the same asset, which is just kind of like funky to think about. But that's something that we as a project, as a community, can do that almost nobody else in the space can. That's because we have this whole like multi-chain thing kind of solved already. So that might happen at some point in the future, which would be kind of fascinating.
Wouldn't that just be integration with something like Layer 0 and Stargate, though?
No, well, Layer 0 and Stargate, like, they're not, they're just bridging assets across different chains, right? But whenever you're doing that, you're just moving. You're not actually burning one and then minting on the other side. You're actually just like locking things up like a wrap asset would be. So it's not really quite the same idea or approach. I don't think you could, I'm not sure if you could viably, I mean, you probably could do it with Layer 0, possibly, maybe. I have to think about it more.
Awesome. Thanks. And I think my question was more towards, like, could we use Rune specifically on something like ThorSwap and have some bot or an app that moves all our rune to whichever LP pair is the most profitable at that time.
Yes, that's theoretically possible. How that'd be structured would be kind of complicated. It would be, require you to send your rune to some sort of custodian of some kind, probably like some server somewhere that just like monitoring all these positions and making calculations and moving your LP position around. And I mean, it's theoretically possible, but I'm not sure if it would make sense, to be honest.
Great. Thanks for your time.
Hey guys, I have a quick question just around the near term deliverables after Luna UST integration. It sounds like ThorFi is probably a few months away from now, but in terms of the other deliverables, I saw DEX aggregation. I also saw the IBC integration as well. Could you just, I know this is a little bit off topic, but could you just maybe walk through the roadmap on both of those and give us a little bit more of a sense on timeline, and also with DEX aggregation, I don't know if you can maybe just describe what progress has been made with other chains, what might be maybe worthwhile to discuss. That'd be really helpful.
Sure. Right. So Terra is now, after this, is probably going to be either IBC or DEX aggregation. Most of the work is done with DEX aggregation. So there's two parts of DEX aggregation. There's what we call swap in and swap out. And so swap in is the idea that that ThorChain is the last DEX in the chain, whatever that chain of DEXs. ThorChain is the last one. And swap out is ThorChain is not the last one. There's something after it. So it's swapping out to something else, which could be, you know, Uniswap or 1inch or Astro or whatever. So most of that work is done. I would say majority of it. The complexity at this point is, so the swap in part is done. You don't need to do anything. It just works out of the box. Swap out is the one that is more trickier. And the problem we're dealing with now in this regard is that when you're swapping out, the gas costs on Ethereum are complicated. Whereas now it's not really complicated because more or less every ERC-20 out there, or ETH, whatever, is the gas cost is more or less the same. And with the exception of Aave, Aave is different because it's got a proxy contract, blah, blah, blah. But like the vast majority of them are pretty much the same. But with swap out, you're going towards, you know, 1inch or Paraswap or like one of these things, the gas costs will be different from, you know, contract A versus contract B. And so to kind of get an idea of how much gas is going to cost to use this other DEX platform, whatever that is, and then have ThorChain be aware of what that cost is so they it can appropriately take out of the swap whatever the appropriate amount of funds are to pay for the gas cost of 1inch. That's tricky. That's complicated and tricky and something we have to work on and solve. But I think that's once this Luna thing is kind of delivered, and the UST and Terra thing is delivered, which is hopefully going to happen in the next, you know, 12 hours or so. I think that's going to be the next thing that we're going to work on is this, getting this DEX aggregation thing done and this IBC done. Even the IBC part is like, I think the IBC, the coding part of the IBC is done, is already done, I think. It hasn't been tested yet, but it theoretically, if I did it right, the way that Jack, you know, explained it to me and told me what I had to do to get IBC functional on ThorChain, we've already got the code part of it done. We just need to validate and test it and then set up a relayer, which takes all of 15 minutes to do. And so it could be, you know, as soon as next week. So theoretically, it all just depends upon the timing of when we have time and when Jack over on the IBC team has time to validate that the change we've made is the change that needs to be made to make IBC functional. But all the DEX aggregation in IBC, I'm hoping to get that all done and delivered to the community within the next, you know, 2 weeks, maybe 4 weeks, to get that all done. And then after that, I think the fixation is going to be on ThorFi stuff and probably derived assets first of ThorFi.
Amazing. Thanks.
I'll just add a little bit more detail from the ThorSwap side of things. We've been working on the DEX aggregation, and we've got basically three providers out of the gate, which will be SushiSwap, Uniswap V2 and V3, and those contracts are already being audited. So we've got multiple security teams auditing those contracts, and we're also already working on 0x and 1inch. So those are going to be our first integrations as far as DEX aggregation goes, more towards the ERC20 side of things. But then coming down the road, we're going to be adding a lot more chains, and aggregation will grow, I think, really rapidly this year into basically an anything-to-anything type of swap.
So in terms of developments then, and I guess more press around Thorchain, it sounds like it's a pretty steady flow after Luna UST.
Steady flow of like features, you mean?
Yeah, just developments, either partnerships, I guess you could call them, with these other DEXs and AMMs.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's always been a steady flow. Like the dev team has always been just like delivering things. It just hasn't been like big features for quite a while. Like it was just fixated on trying to stabilize, improve reliability, security, resiliency, like all these kind of things, and just giving things, you know, to a point of maturity. And I think we've largely accomplished that as a project, which is great. And so now we can kind of tune, kind of like change our kind of our sights, our scopes on something that expands what the chain is capable of doing, and change the value proposition to increase it quite significantly, which is what I think we're doing now. And then we're also at the same time, as you kind of touched upon, like we're trying to talk to various DEXs in the space and wallets and exchanges in general to kind of like convince them to integrate with Thorchain. And it's, to be honest, it's actually been a very, very funny conversation at times. Like I was talking to somebody recently on a DEX aggregator. I won't mention which one, but like we were like talking to them. I was like, we were saying, oh, it'd be great because now you can, integrate, layer one real Bitcoin. And they just like couldn't understand this concept. Like I had to explain it like four times. They were like, but like the WBDC? We're like, no. It's layer one real Bitcoin. It's not a wrapped Bitcoin. But is it another form of WBDC? Like their brains like they've been so stuck in the Ethereum mentality for so long that like their brains couldn't comprehend the idea that like that you could actually have real Bitcoin. I don't know. It was almost like comical to have the conversation, and it's been funny to have this conversation. But getting their brains to break beyond the Ethereum ecosystem has been surprisingly almost difficult at times, which is kind of not surprising to me.
Getting there, hopefully. I mean, it takes time. It's amazing how in a space like this, which is such a breakneck pace of innovation, even still you have these people that can't really wrap their head around the benefits of having a native Bitcoin or other native tokens. But you guys, it's definitely not lost on you guys. So
that's,
so
great, I mean, that's the, that is the case in some of these cases, in some of these teams that I've spoken with, where like, we might say to them, hey, we can give you access to Bitcoin and Terra and these like really interesting and powerful and valuable ecosystems to help add value to your users. And some of them have been like, well, we're just afraid of bridges in general. We don't want to have any bridges whatsoever. And this kind of mentality. And in my head, I'm just like, okay, you want to be left in the dust. That, I guess that's your, I didn't say this obviously because that'd be kind of rude, but like, but like, if you want to be left in the dust while everybody else is kind of migrating to a more universal, inclusive, DEX system where you have access to like basically any asset and chain that you choose, all with a single transaction, which is completely seamless and like super easy and clean from a UX and UI perspective, then okay, you can run your DEX how you want to. But like, I'm just going to let you know that if you don't do this, I didn't say this to them because I wanted to be respectful, but like in my head, I was just like, if you don't do this, you're going to be, you're going to be a dinosaur within 6 months. And it's just going to, no one's going to use your platform nearly as much as they do now. It's just, to me, that's the obvious thing.
Yeah. Well, that's it for me. Thanks, Paul.
It's funny to hear how they just like, they're like, what do you mean? Real Bitcoin? What is that?
It was hilarious. I'm telling you, man, I was trying to stop myself from laughing of how many times I had to explain to them what what Bitcoin was.
Have you heard of it?
Have you heard of this thing called Bitcoin? It's like, yeah, but you can't do Bitcoin. I'm like, we are doing Bitcoin. Layer one real Bitcoin. Get this through your head.
Well, it sure does feel like most of the space doesn't quite understand it yet, which is just wild. And why we're just thinking about it 24/7 and screaming about it, because it's like, hey, guys, have you freaking noticed what's happening yet? It's wild.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at like Shapeshift is built by a team of people who are all Bitcoin like advocates and strong believers, from Michael Perkland to Eric Voorhees to John to like all these people. They're all like Bitcoin, like, you know, huge advocates, fans, fanatics, whatever. And so when we launched ThorChain back in April, on literally day one, they replaced their back end with ThorChain effectively, because they saw the value. It was like blatantly obvious to them how game changing this is and how important it is to the greater space of crypto. And so like they just jumped on it immediately. But like so many of these other kind of exchanges and DEXs, they're just like, I don't know. Like, and to me, it's just like, what do you mean you don't know? This is the most important asset in crypto. And you're like, I don't know if I want to add it. Like, there was one person we were talking to, we were like, we asked them, like, what is the trade volume of WBDC? And they're like, well, it's, you know, it's like the number two traded, most traded asset on our DEX. And I'm like, okay, doesn't that tell you something? What do you think would happen if it was real Bitcoin instead of this like rap bullshit Bitcoin? What do you think the trade volume would be on that? And it was just like, oh my God, people, come on, please help me out here.
Hell yeah. Yeah, it feels like only a matter of time. Like as soon as some of the big ones start to add it, then immediately their product is just that much better, has that much more reach. So suddenly everyone else will be left in the dust. I mean, I that's the way I see it too. Donku, how's it going? Donku, you there?
Yeah. Sorry, I had to unmute myself. I was just listening to you guys. Hey, I'm getting a little bit of FOMO here because I heard that the Luna UST stuff is going live now, and I'm in Barcelona because of the AVIX conference. So you're riding me. That's not happening, right? I have not my setup with me. Don't do that to me.
I know. Well, it kind of sounds like it's happening.
I'll tell you what, Donku, we'll pause the entire thing and we'll wait just for you.
Yeah, it won't go live until your video is up. That's the official launch date.
No, I just wanted to quickly say congratulations, right? It's a huge step forward, and that's why I enjoyed so much when you were listening, talking right now on the whole Bitcoin topic, because it is big, right? And I can finally also get my Bitcoin over UST. And yeah, I will be very asymmetrically with UST into the pool, right, to maximize my long position on Rune. So I can't wait. So just wanted to quickly come up here and say congratulations again to the whole team. If it's going live in a few hours, that's really, really big. And that's all I wanted to contribute here quickly, to say kudos.
Thank you, Donku. It's been a long time coming, a lot of work, a lot of energy put into this. Pluto's done a lot of that work, most of that work, I'd say. So congrats to Pluto, congrats to the dev team, congrats to the community. This thing is going to be huge, for sure.
So you're delisting all the other stablecoins, is that right?
Not quite.
Let's go!
It's an open system for the community to decide what assets they want or don't want on the network. So we have no say in this.
Chain agnostic.
Hey, you want to convince the rest of the community to like unstake their positions on BUSD and USDC and all these things, then you can go ahead and campaign for that.
Yeah, or the best way to incentivize that is to use it, right? Like get that swap volume going. That'll make the APY highest. That'll attract the most liquidity. Yeah, you know, it's a free for all. If you're in the BUSD, like, it'll be really interesting to see if that pool actually like shrinks up a bit and migrates over to the UST pool or what that dynamic is going to be. But yeah,
I'm willing to bet.
Just kidding, right? I'm just kidding. It's totally fine, whatever. But I mean, as you said, Chad, right? I guess probably a lot of people, which makes sense, are also in BUSD because it's cheap. It will be interesting to see how much volume. Don't know if you have like expectations, but as you are not working with oracles, right? ThorChain is so special. I can't wait how much positive effect it also has on the pack in general with an algorithmic stablecoin, because there is no other algorithmic stablecoin yet on ThorChain. Am I mistaken? No, right?
correct. There's none. It's only centralized coins like, I don't know if you consider DAI to be centralized or not. It's like 50% centralized and 50% not. But that's probably the closest thing right now, that other than UST coming pretty soon.
Yeah, big stuff. No, great, great. So I don't want to keep you all busy here with this stuff. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming up. Anyone else? Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say one more quick question, Chad. I know you're chatting about it. And I also had the Cephi just getting 100 and just keep, and then like years from now, and just appreciate free look. But just going back to that, what about the reverse? Because I know you mentioned that when someone deposits, like, let's say, a coin or Litecoin, whatever, savings wallet, it burns rune. But if people withdraw, that mints more rune. So theoretically, if everyone withdraws and nobody redeposits, does that just leave a net positive of a bunch of rune? I'm just thinking ahead if there was like a unwind of the flywheel. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So that is hypothetically possible, right? The idea that like a bunch of people enter and Thor BTC and Thor F and Thor Luna, blah, 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 and the rune price doesn't perform as well as those assets in aggregate, and then everybody leaves the next day, then yes, the rune supply would overall increase by relative to the amount of performance in aggregate that rune has underperformed the rest of those assets in combination. In reality, that, in my opinion, that would never really happen, right? Like, That can happen with the Terra system today, right? Where everybody jumps into UST, and then the market goes bear, and then people sell their UST into Luna, and therefore increase the Luna supply, right? That's true with any of these kind of mint and burn style stable coins.
Let's burn it.
But what you have to imagine is that because, in, like, take Terra's case for example. Where Terra has like $13 billion locked up in UST, that's a lot of Luna that's been burnt to get to that place. Now, maybe we get into a bear cycle and some of that Luna is burnt into Luna, right? Increasing relative to what it was input before. But then aggregate is still going to be net negative on the Luna token because you're not going to see $13 billion leave that system and then go into Luna, then get traded to something else. You might see a few billion here and there or something like this, or maybe even half in kind of more extreme scenarios. But you're really, relatively speaking, from all like points of just rationality, unless there's a full collapse of UST, which I sincerely doubt that would happen. But like, you know, then you wouldn't see this kind of increase in the supply. So an individual trader who acquires Thor BTC and then sells it later, yes, there could be an increase in rune in that scenario. But you can't look at it as individual traders. You have to look at it in the aggregate. And because there's going to be some amount of money that's going to be just kind of sitting in the network earning yield, whether that be the USD vault or the Thor savings or whatever, or people just want to acquire Thor BTC so they can beam it over IBC to, you know, Osmosis and get yield on an Osmosis pool or something like this, whatever the reason or cause, there's always going to be some quantity of Thor BTC that's just like locked up more or less forever, like, or at least a percentage of it that just will always be out. And so the idea that Rune's going to underperform BTC so much so that it's in the billions of dollars seems extremely unlikely. Is it possible? Absolutely possible. Sure. Is it likely? Hell the fuck no. Is it not? It's not likely.
Cool. All right, man. Hey, I appreciate it. I'll be dropping some more videos and Twitter threads for you guys. So I finally think I understand the Thor 5 fully.
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah. Anyone else? Just go for it.
Okay. Cool. So quick question, specifically about ThorFi. So will the loans be self-repaying or not? I've been going through the Discord channels and it seems that they won't actually be self-repaying, but they will be non-liquidating. Is that true?
Correct. So the choice was, there's really two choices here, right? If you wanted to do self-repaying loans, you could. hypothetically within the context of ThorChain's ecosystem. But if you did that, you wouldn't have the ability to do Thor savings. The Thor savings wouldn't exist, and you'd have these loans that are self-repaying, and maybe that's what the community would prefer. I don't know, right? I wouldn't personally prefer that, but that's just my personal two cents. So that you can either do non-self-repaying, you can either do self-repaying or no liquidations. And out of those two things, no liquidations is much more innovative. It's much more valuable than
no liquidations. If you have a self-repaying loan, it could be liquidating, but I thought the idea was to go more towards like the Alchemix model where it would be a non-liquidating self-repaying loan.
Right. We can't do both of them. I mean, I guess in theory you could do partially both, but you can still get easily liquidated on Alchemix. Even if you're making a really great yield,
can't get liquidated on Alchemix, right?
Huh?
You can't get liquidated on Alchemix.
No, you can definitely get liquidated on Alchemix. So just because it's self-repaying doesn't mean you can't get liquidated. That's definitely not the case. So if you're earning like a 20% yield on Alchemix, whatever it's using, I think it uses a urine in the background to generate yield. Let's just give it a high percentage of 20%. It's actually much lower than that in reality. I think it's closer to like 7% or something like this. But let's give you the benefit of the doubt here and say it's 20%. How long would it take your collateral to pay back the loan? Years, right? The idea that within 1 year, will your collateral drop in more than 20% in value? Yeah, it's actually probably likely, to be honest with you, right? And if that happens, then you get liquidated, right? So self-repaying loans do not protect you from liquidations. And the problem I have with lending today in the DeFi space today is that it's like super stressful to be a lender because you're always afraid of being liquidated, or you're afraid of like interest rates being spiked or ballooned underneath you. It creates this very stressful thing where you have to like monitor your loan every day. And if you you have to be able to pay it back in a heartbeat because you're going to lose all your collateral, blah, 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 or just dump more collateral into it. It's just like a huge stressor in anybody's life who's actually done that kind of stuff. So in my opinion, no liquidations is much more valuable than a self-repaying loan. So that's just my opinion.
I think you're confusing Alchemix and Abra, right? Abra has the self-repaying loans because you can use yield-paying tokens, yield-bearing assets. Alchemix has the self-repaying and non-liquidating loans, but they have a lower debt cap. So you can't just like mint crazy amounts of OWL assets. But I understand what you're saying.
Hey, guys. really love the project. I have two questions. The first one is, are you going to be adding Monero to the swapping?
I'd like to see Monero added. There's a lot of work being done by the Haven team to be able to support a crypto note based chain, which Haven is a crypto note, and so is Haven. So is Monero. But Monero is also very, very problematic because not just because it's ring signatures, which is really complicated and difficult and makes everything much harder from a DEX perspective, but also because its op return is 16 byte maximum. 16 bytes is, damn near zero. I mean, a crypto note address is 97 bytes, to give you a comparison. And so we'd have to generate a new mechanism to define your transactional intent to be able to do that within 16 bytes, which is a very, very tight space to do it. It's possible, and we have ideas how that can be accomplished, but it's just it just makes things more difficult and complex for the end user.
Yeah, that'd be so cool to see that somehow, get created, like the feature to make that happen. And the second question is, in terms of like privacy, is there some sort of mechanism you guys are thinking about in terms of, swapping between between currencies, but then the end result is basically the tokens, whatever it is the tokens are, end up in someone's, in your wallet, but it's not linked to the one before. So either it's a shielded transaction or maybe like a Tornado Cash thing that happens in the middle. Are there any ideas around privacy in that regard?
Yeah, there was discussions early on within the design of ThorChain, and we had a good conversation as a team about whether or not we wanted to do privacy. We are obviously all big fans of it. There's nobody who's like not a fan of it. But privacy itself is very, very difficult to get right, to get it good. A lot of things that are privacy focused within the crypto space aren't as private as people think that they are. And we wanted to stay focused on doing what we do, which is, you know, creating a settlement layer, layer one, where people can swap from any asset to any asset and not get too distracted by adding things that don't really relate to that. And then we wanted to say that once we kind of thought about the idea of like, well, we're building composability across chain so that you can access the features of Bitcoin or the features of Ethereum or the features of Monero and utilize those chains for what they do and what they do well. And so we're not trying to compete with Monero or compete with Ethereum or compete with Bitcoin. We're just trying to give you access to these systems that are very powerful and do what they do very, very well. So privacy for us is not so much we do within the DEX itself, but it is something you have access to because you can access, you know, a Monero-like chain.
Cool. Thank you.
I think Baby had his hand. Her hand up.
I was just gonna say. I'm driving and I was rugging a little bit, but I hope you can hear me. There were a couple of questions that I wanted to ask that were actually already asked. At this particular point, after listening for quite a while, I want to just say you guys are doing an incredible job. And I'm not just saying an incredible job technically, because I'm a bit of a degen. I like trading, etc. But your communication is just fabulous. The way you're explaining things is great. I'm not sure if everybody else feels the same way, but I just feel like you guys are really giving solid, solid answers to the questions being asked. I actually do have a question, but I have to mute myself because I'm parking right now and I have to get out of the car. If you're still on in 5 minutes, when I walk back into my apartment, I will ask, but I had to say that before I got out of the car really quick.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the compliment there. I think a lot of it is just because of the work that Chad Theroux and Tony Lukow do within the community. They're really good people who've put a lot of their time into this project. And so I'm very appreciative, and I'm sure the community in general is too.
Thanks. Yeah. And my job is just to listen to you, Chad, and try to grasp 80% of it so I can just repeat it to everyone else.
One more question. If you're bullish Rune, right? Until single staking is, you know, an option. If you're bullish Rune, does it make the most sense to pair with a stablecoin in pool?
I don't know. You have any thoughts on this, Chad Theroux?
I would say not. I mean, to me, that kind of, it's more of a conservative strategy. The only way that could be make sense is like if you're holding stables in your portfolio anyways, and then you pair that up with Rune you're just holding anyways, then with impermanent loss protection, like you can't end up worse off value wise than that. But yeah, to me, that's more of like a conservative strategy, kind of like a dollar cost averaging, like in and out as the Rune price fluctuates. Personally, I'm kind of more in volatile assets. So like, I don't really look at, though an interesting strategy I think will be is once like loans and stuff roll out, using borrowed money for like the more conservative pools is a strategy that definitely makes sense. I know like Lunomics in the Terra world, like that's kind of his strategy for like stacking more Luna, is like borrowing against Luna and then using that in like a Luna UST pool. So then if Luna goes down, he's acquiring more Luna as collateral. And if Luna goes up, then that Luna UST on borrowed money is selling Luna, but overall you're still better off. So strategies like that I think are interesting, but I would say like as of right now, I mean, if you're like full Rune bull, unless you're sitting on stables anyways, I don't really think it makes sense. And even pairing with other assets, like for me, this is just my personal outlook, but I wouldn't just like look down the list of what has a high APY and be like, oh, I'm going to go into the whatever ERC-20 random pool on Thorchain. Like for me, it makes sense to pair with an asset that I want exposure to anyways. So for me, that's like, that's about to be Luna. That's Bitcoin. But you know, just to kind of depends on you. Like if you're already holding an asset, then it makes perfect sense. But I wouldn't like other, if you just ape in asymmetrically from your Rune, you're basically selling half of that, right? So yeah, just my thoughts.
Yeah, I think about stable pools as a way of dollar cost averaging buying or selling. So that if it's going into a bear kind of posture, you're dollar cost averaging into Rune. And if it's going into a bull, you're dollar cost averaging out of Rune into a stable. That's kind of how I think about it.
But the ILP will, correct me if I'm wrong here, right? So even if I do asymmetrically Rune, the ILP, if I'm paired with the stable, I'm guaranteed to get the amounts that I put in or the dollar value that I put in, correct? Which one is it?
Well, so it's based on the 50-50 though, no matter what. So right. if you ape in from one side, your protection is just from that initial 50-50 split, right? So like,
let's,
I don't know.
Easy numbers and say 1,000 rune and let's say that's worth 500, like when I ape in, it's $500 and 500 rune.
$500 and 500. So are you saying a rune is $1 for the example?
Assume rune is $1.
So then, right. So after 100 days, the value you would withdraw, you could just look at, okay, what is 500 rune and 500 UST worth today, right? Like in reality, if rune goes way up, that means you're going to be withdrawing less rune and more UST. But the point that you'd be protected against is what is 500 and 500 worth today after the 100 days. So the overall value, you know, calculated through rune would be that as a minimum. Does that make sense?
Right, which may or may not be more than 1,000 of rune is what you're saying? The way I'm saying that is like, okay, the pool's 50-50, right? And or you're saying in the future, the pool may 500 rune and 500 UST may not be worth the same thing. So I could have lost tons of rune, but I'm guaranteed at least 500 worth.
Yeah, with a stable pool, let's see. Yeah, that would mean, well, your total value being withdrawn would be, I'm not good at public math, but yeah, you'd be withdrawing whatever 500 rune is worth at that time plus the $500 would be your minimum total value. But in reality, that could be a lot less rune if rune had like tripled or something like that.
Okay.
And so just to go on your original point, when you asked, is it the amount in rune or the amount in dollars? When Chad's talking about value, that's going to be the dollar value. So if you compare it to like, if you were to hold it, it's not if you were to hold it and have, you know, 1,000 rune that you aped in and sold half of, it's going to be based on dollar values. So the balance of that pool could definitely change over time. You might have a lot less rune than you did before, but what you're guaranteed to have through ILP is at least the same dollar amount out if when you exit that pool.
Understood. Got it. Thank you.
Well, it's a little bit quiet in here and we just crossed the 3-hour mark. Is it? Anybody else have burning questions they want to get to before we jump on?
Everyone, huge fan of the project. I'm wondering, like, from your perspective, is another like hack? And I know over time, the severity of the hacks will decrease. But like, what could make Rune not a top project in this space? Like, I don't really see anything negative besides the fact there hasn't been as much like fake hype around it, which a lot of crypto projects are driven by. But like from your perspective, long term, besides catastrophic hack, which is like getting more and more unlikely every day, like what could potentially cause Rune to not be like used by most people, not most people, but like used by so many people in the future?
I mean, to answer that question, it's just the question around adoption, right? For most people in the industry, they're still sleeping on this project, to be honest with you. The trade volume that we've seen in the network today is nowhere close to what it honestly should be. And so the question just becomes of like, well, can we convince the greater crypto sphere around using this particular, you know, DEX? And to me, a big part of that is partnerships and collaborations, right? And how many DEX aggregators can we interface and integrate with as a project, as a community, and how many wallets can we interface with, and how many centralized exchanges even can we interface with? And so the more we can do that kind of stuff and just make it so that people don't have to become ThorChain fans to use it. They just are continue to be Paraswap fans, and they just notice one day that they can swap into Bitcoin or something like this, or whatever. Like that's the way to get there, in my opinion. It's a much harder and longer slog to try to like get out there and convince everybody to download one of the ThorChain apps that exists, whether it be DeFiSpot or ThorSwap or whatever. That's a more difficult task, and some people are working on the task, which is we should totally do that as well. Burn the candle at both ends, why don't we? But I think in order to get to huge adoption, I think we're going to need to go beyond just the UI specific apps and do more dex aggregation and integrations.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thanks.
Cool. Well, I think it's probably a good place to wrap up. As Mogarki was saying, I don't see requests coming in now. So, and we're past 3 hours, but this was a blast, and it was really cool to see Pluto and Familiar Cow come on live and kind of announce that everything was going live with Terra. That was kind of the point of today. Hopefully everyone's pumped to start using that. Add some liquidity, do some swaps, swap some UST to some native Bitcoin. It's really just like super exciting to see this coming together after it being 2 weeks away for a while. But yeah. Oh, I do see. Actually, let me bring up PaperX. Oh, I think I know why. I forgot to mention something. One sec.
Paper, hey, Chad. Hey, just want to remind you, don't forget to give away the Terra sweater.
I know. I saw you requesting. I'm like, oh, man, I never said it at the beginning or totally forgot to mention it. But yeah, we're supposed to be giving away 3 of the Terra ThorSwap crew neck sweaters. So, shoot. Yeah, how should I... I should have screenshotted who was asking questions earlier and such. Maybe I can go back through and select some winners. I'll pick a couple right now as well. Let's definitely do Drake. Lots of great questions. So one for you for sure. Let's see. Let's do somebody just at full random, just from the audience. I don't know what that was. I was scrolled down. I don't even know who sound that was.
that was Drake.
What? Hey, you have like the voice changer on?
No, dude, I was messing with this. So I was
okay,
like,
there you
what
go.
What is this thing? Like a bumblebee? What does this sound like? I have no idea what it just sounded like. But yeah. No, dude, I'll rock it in a video. This is sweet, man. I appreciate it.
Hell yeah. We'll sort that out with you, how to get it, how to claim it. Let's do, I was just picking, where'd he go? Let's go with Austin X Allen. You'll win one as well. Just random from the audience. And then, I'll pick one more from somebody that asked a question earlier. I'll go back through, and message, but I don't want to leave out the people that were asking great questions earlier on. So that'll be the third one. But, yeah. And then, we'll just, I guess, Paper, how will we reach out to them? Oh, through ThorChad's Twitter? Is that where we'll reach out to them?
So if you go to the ThorChad's DAO Twitter account, you'll see we just announced the Terra merch drop. So just DM us and we'll get you your sweater. And also we just announced as a special announcement today as well, actually, for all of our limited edition merch, will automatically airdrop you a NFT to go alongside with it. So yeah, that's the power of the Web3 store.
Hell yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, thanks again for the reminder. Just got so excited with the launch and all the ThorFi stuff, I totally forgot about it. Also, Austin just requested up the winner. How's it going?
Love it, man. Super appreciate it. Gonna rock the shirt everywhere.
Awesome. Love to hear it. Cool. Well, yeah, thanks, Chad B. Thanks for your time for popping in. Thanks, Mogarki, of course, for all the info you gave and for everyone who popped in, asked questions, or just listened. Terra's finally here. So sounds like within the next 12 hours or something like that, we'll probably be trading live. So yeah, we made it.
Awesome. Congrats, everybody.
All right. See you guys.
Congratulations.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, congrats. Cheers.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was part two of the two-part ThorSwap Q&A talking about Terra ThorChain integration, Luna, and Rune, and all that good stuff. Recorded on Thursday, March 24th, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Luart. Luart is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. Luart provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by Glow Yield. Glow Yield is the ecosystem of Terra decentralized apps like Lotto and Creators, all powered by DeFi Yields. Glow Creators helps artists and influencers give their fans exclusive perks through membership, NFTs, and more. Glow Lotto is a PrizeLink savings account with a weekly chance to win the big jackpot. Tickets are free and perpetual, which means there's zero chance to lose money. Be sure to follow Glow Yield on Twitter and join the Discord community to stay up to date with all the glowing projects and check them out online at glowyield.com. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Sipping on a little bit of sin I've been giving. Try to keep it written down so it feels like I've been living. I've been realizing a minute reality ain't got limits. Going out my fucking mind, testing out the physics, stretching out the distance. For instance, let me be specific. The risk is hedge funded the business. Betting on the difference, ingesting all the research. Sleeping through the rebirth, sliding out feet first. Sleep tight, little dreamer. Early to bed, early to rise with a rugged ass demeanor. Taking beats to the cleaners. You know I love my t-shirts and the people who support my little dream here. Transparent cows, I gotta steer clear. 2020 going down is one fucking weird year. Take a second look around, the psyops is winning. Set the table, we just biopsy dinner.
Now I'm gonna react to that and act like I'm telling you a personal anecdote. Something to break the tension, something to endear myself a little bit, something kind of embarrassing. And you guys are gonna make an awe sound. It's true. It really happened.
They got a tracker in the phone, tracking everywhere we go. When it's final, I don't know. I already sold my soul. Getting ready, rock and roll. Tip the first domino. Feeling abominable with these avalanche flows. Stop and rest on the road. Gotta get where I'm going. And the rest of y'all know that we hit the ground soaring. I'll be coming for the fuckers that be summoning the trouble. Running on the double while I'm handing out the W's. Putting wins on the board every fucking day. They love me on the team because I know my fucking place. Better get in where you fit in. I'm delivering the meaning. I inherited the demons, always sneaky, never seen them. If I'm breathing, I'm reading, I'm not even being conceited. I need to see for myself if you think that I'm believing. It's the season of reason, y'all be ceasing the research. I'm receiving the meaning, that shit's called teamwork.
It's not so much as so little has to do with what everything is. But it is within our self-interest to understand the topography of our lives unto ourselves. The future states that there is no time other than the collapsation of that sensation of the mirror of the memories in which we are living. Common knowledge, but important nonetheless.
Terra Spaces.